been so long, and it seems like it was only yesterday.
Al Green. It's funny how time slips away.
Yes.
Hey, good morning to our friends on the West Coast. Good afternoon to our friends on the East and Central time zones. Hey, welcome to the World on Finance. My name is William A. Brown, and I'm happy to bring to the set my partner, the man that you need to talk to regarding your taxes, all right? Mr. Everett James. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, William.
Yes, yes, yes. How are you?
I'm doing well, and can you hear me okay?
Oh, loud and clear. Hey, you know, we're experiencing quite a bit of rain here on the East Coast. How is it on the West?
Well, it's currently beautiful, between high 70s and low 80s.
Yeah.
For the last week, and as sunny as can be.
Oh man, that's beautiful. Tell you what, let's make a trade. I'll send you some rain. You send me some sunshine.
Hey, that sounds good.
All right, my friend. Hey, what's?
I won't be unhappy with the rain because that's what that reminds me of home.
Well, you know what? Southern California, you guys can't get enough rain now.
Oh no, we sure can.
Yeah,
that's one of the things I miss.
I understand. So, what's on tap this morning?
Oh, very good. First, we'll get just an update on some of the newer developments at the IRS. And then we'll spend the balance of the time discussing the CBDC, the central bank digital currency innovations that are about to be installed in our government financial system.
Okay. Well, I'm going to step aside and the floor is yours, sir.
Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Brown, and welcome listening audience, wherever ye be. My name is Everett James. My contact number is 951-522-9877. For those who are more disposed communicating via the internet, it's evjtax1@gmail.com. That's evjtax1@gmail.com. Well, it's June 21st, approximately 60 days from the 2022 tax filing season deadline. And here we are. Looking at the beginning of the second half of 2023, which we will certainly be focusing on developments now and into 2024 regarding your 2023 tax filing reports. Initially, may be things that you need to know about as far as your current writable deductions. There's about, I've got about nine of them here, and then we'll get into a discussion of the CBDC, the Central Bank Digital Currency Innovations, and likelihood of being installed. The first update is about the charitable write-off deductions. As you know, due to the 2017 legislation under the past Donald Trump administration, there were changes made in the way your tax returns were filed. Either itemized deductions or taking the standard deduction. That was always the fork in the road, the first fork in the road in deciding how you're going to file. But because of the 2017 tax legislation, the standard deduction was increased by huge amounts. Up to that point, it was generally always more tax advantageous write off your taxes on the Schedule A itemized deduction form. But that was because the standard deduction was generally always lower and less of a deduction than what you would get from itemizing. Well, the 2017 tax legislation changed all that, and it just turned the cart around, making the standard deduction a more beneficial choice as opposed to the itemized deduction form. And they did that by just substantially increasing the standard deduction for all categories, all filing categories. That in itself just cut down on millions, literally millions of taxpayers and huge amounts of time and energy by IRS in their auditing activities. And they basically simplified their tax returns by a large amount, because for most people, the Schedule A actually was the biggest paperwork chore and it created the most demands and time and effort to complete, as opposed to just taking the standard deduction. So to bring you up to date, one of those deductions on the Schedule A had always been the charitable write-off, the charitable deduction for donations. Under current law, you could only really write off charitable deductions. You could only write them off if it made sense, to do that, because it would result in filling out the Schedule A. Under the current law, only the people who itemize on Schedule A can really deduct donations they make to charity. But there's a bipartisan group of legislators who really feel that that's really unfair to folks in the lower income brackets. They feel that that folks who do not itemize, cannot itemize, or it's not advantageous for them to itemize, they should get have the right to deduct that charitable contributions. And they want to make that deduction available to everyone, even though they're not itemizing their return. So the specifics would be the change of legislation, so it would let folks who do not itemize actually deduct the charitable contributions, and they want to kick up that amount kick it all the way up to as much as a third of the standard deductions that are currently in place. That's a huge amount. So that would mean that the write-offs just for charitable deductions could spike. It could jump up to as much as $4,600, $4,617 to be exact, for folks who are single, and for people who and for couples, married, filing, joining, and for heads of household, that would also be spiked. The head of house would be head of households would be considered a single, as I mentioned, their write-offs could increase to as much as $4,600 for couples, married, filing, joined folks. Their write-off could go all the way up to $9,200, $9,233 to be exact. But the odds on this actually getting through the Congress this year are less than low. There's a lot better chance of another charitable deduction arrangement being revived, and that's the one that is $300 for single and $600 for folks who are married. That's more likely the arrangement that will be made. We'll have to watch the legislation and see what happens. Okay, the second update is the question is whether you can get a benefit of that qualified business income deduction, QBI they call it. It's a 20% qualified business income. And basically, whatever you earn, basically, whatever you, your earnings are, after all of the deductions, et cetera, et cetera, I might be eligible for the, what they call a QBI, which is 20% of that earnings, the profit, you might say. The question is whether or not you might be able to get that 20% QBI deduction, which is in place now. Well, the answer is it depends. Self-employed individuals and owners of LLCs, limited liability companies, S corporations, and other pass-through entities can deduct 20% of their qualified business income. But that's subject to limitations. It starts being limited folks, for example, couples, married filing joint, reach the taxable income of $364,000 or more, then it would start to be limited. And if the person is single, when their taxable income reaches $182,000, deduction starts becoming limited. Next thing is that the Schedule E rental income may be eligible for the write-off in just some cases. Don't depend on it for, just because you're doing a Schedule E. Applying the QBI rules to income from rentals of real estate is really thorny, and you have to meet a number of other qualifying conditions. One thing that's good is that there is a safe harbor. In other words, if you meet the safe harbor, you don't have to worry about it not being qualified. And that safe harbor is if you spend 250 hours or more of qualifying time actually doing things in that industry, such as repairs, collecting rent, negotiating the leases, tenant services, that time is, if that is put in and all of those things add up to 250 hours a year, that's the safe harbor you'll meet and you'll get that deduction. Time, driving to and from the real estate are not included. You have to meet really strict record keeping requirements and attach a statement actually to your tax return. Meeting that safe harbor would let you treat that rental activity as a trade or business for QBI purposes. Okay, another update is that this is concerning the self-employed individuals and whether or not they can deduct state and local property taxes in their businesses. Well, as you remember, because of the 2017 tax legislation, state and local property taxes were limited to $10,000. And that was the limit that you could actually deduct on the Schedule A. If you are in a business or a for-profit activity, you can deduct those things, the state and local taxes in total. There's no limitation on you. And you can deduct those in full on your Schedule C. Farmers can take them on the Schedule F. landlords can deduct them on the Schedule E, and there is a specific line for that purpose. Okay, the fourth update is folks who love to go to casinos and are in the gambling industry, the casinos are tired of having so many people being issued the W2G is the form that's using on the gambling winnings, and they want to set a threshold at $1,200, which would cut down on a lot of paperwork during the filing season. And they're hoping to get $1,200 set as a threshold for slots. And I believe it's $1,500 for keynotes. A bipartisan House bill would raise that slot winning amount to $5,000 and adjust it annually for inflation. And so, you know, right now, as I say, currently, if you win $1,200 or more, you are going to have to settle up with IRS with the W-2G form this reported. And as I mentioned, $1,500 or more in Keno, but they want to get that threshold raised to $5,000. That's not surprising that the sponsors for this proposal are all from Nevada. Just failing to report gambling winning can draw, special attention from IRS. So I'd like to bring that to your attention. I think that it would be interesting to families with children. Summer day camp costs for children qualify for the dependent care credit. Now, dependent care credit is documented on the form 2441. Those costs, can be entered as qualifying the cost that you can get a deduction for on the form 2441. And those camps include things where the primary objective is for sports improvement, math, computers, theater, or just general fun. Plus, it includes before and after care. Isn't that interesting? Sports, math, computers, theater, or general fun, before and after care. Things that are not, cannot be deducted are tutoring, summer school, or overnight camps. So to repeat again, tutoring, summer school, or overnight camps. Keep in mind that the dependent care credit is for your children under the age of 13. So if they're 13 or more, they're not going to, if it's for a child 13 or more in age, by the end of the year, you're not going to be able to qualify, to deduct those summer expenses on your tax return. And keep in mind that if you're taking the credit for help with a relative who is not a qualifying child, such as an aging parent or a grandparent, that person who's being cared for needs to have lived with you for more than 6 months during the year and be unable to provide the care for himself or herself. So keep those things in mind. What's coming soon, and I try to keep you up to date on that, IRS technology and service upgrades for business taxpayers. Among some of the oncoming improvements, online accounts for small businesses which are features that are similar to those that are now in place for individuals. So individuals can access IRS through this special technology protected service, and IRS is now developing the accounts to allow tax or not tax but allow folks who are in business, small businesses, to use the same kind of account to handle their back and forth queries and responses to IRS and actually manage their tax accounts. Seventh update is this bad news for nonprofits that operate far too much like a for-profit business. A court, a tax court, recently decided that one nonprofit was operating as a tax-exempt social welfare organization, and they decided it really was not operating that way. The group originally incorporated as a nonprofit accountable care organization to render services for patients with Medicaid or commercial insurance. Well, IRS denied the group's exemption. IRS said it operated primarily for the benefit of commercial payers and doctors, and was really not exclusively for promoting social welfare. And I would almost hint that there may be some scandalous goings on and a similar type of behavior by some other medical organizations that have sprung up in the wake of all of these Medicare expansions. The eighth update is keep in mind that if you're filing for a refund, don't rely on just regular mail. Recently, a man filed his 1040X, his 1040 change amendment by first class mail. And he waited, and then he contacted the IRS when he didn't receive his refund, and wow, found out that his claim could not be found. Oh, though he mailed and faxed duplicates, the statute of limitation had run out. IRS, wow, denied the refund, said the claim was just late. So, you know, that if you're going to be doing that, you have to prove that you mailed in the claim on time, and that's not easy. Per the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, you have to register it or get a certified U.S. mail. Those are the ways, either registered or a certified U.S. mail. And those are the ways that you can show presumption of delivery under the statutory mailbox rule. So, but in that particular case, the appeals court sent the case back to the trial court to actually make a final decision on whether the 1040X was physically delivered to IRS on time. So we don't know actually the actual result, but I would imagine that there may have been some extenuating circumstances, in which case the appeals court, whichever court finally decides, may decide that the taxpayer is going to be given credit for having delivered that amendment on time. And the last update is, as you may have heard, about the $80 billion of funding that IRS received because of the debt limit negotiations. Congress clawed back about a quarter, or about 25% of that $80 billion. And they clawed back about $16 billion of it. President Biden made a key IRS concessions in that debt limit deal, and he agreed to reallocate $10 billion of the IRS's windfall in 2024 and another $10 billion in 2025 to other spending priorities, plus another $1.4 billion was cut. That meant the IRS will now get nearly about $59 billion as opposed to $80 billion. Over 10 years for enforcement, modernization, and other goals. It's unclear just how this will affect IRS's future activities. One Treasury official said that the funding drop won't fundamentally change what IRS plans to do over the course of the next few years, but it may cause IRS probably to come back to Congress and ask for additional funds in 6 or more years. I would imagine that's probably highly likely. Depending on the mood of the Congress, they'll probably, if IRS comes back and asks for an additional amount of funding, they'll probably get at least part, if not all, of what they're asking for. Only time will tell the real impact. Okay, folks, as I mentioned earlier, this hour that we spend each week is not only just for updates and information, but it really is a stage, an opportunity for questions and for comments. So please, if you do need some additional detail, more explanation, a different focus, please use the opportunity that is afforded you by contacting this tax reporter, Everett James, at 951-522-9877 to repeat 951-522-9877. For those more comfortable with the internet, please send email to evjtax1@gmail.com. That's evjtax1@gmail.com. And that one is not spelled out. It's just the numeral in the email. Okay. Now let's move to the digital currency situation. The first to be introduced is just recognition that the cryptocurrency industry has certainly took a bombshell last year. Per my reporting source, which is the San Bernardino Sun, San Bernardino, California, that is Sun, there's an article that reports on a collapsed crypto organization boss continues to thrive. And this is not long after, this was actually from Barcelona, Spain, to where the crypto owner has fled. Not long after his cryptocurrency hedge fund collapsed, that is Kyle Davies, after his hedge fund collapsed last year, that really spawned a huge meltdown that really devastated the cryptocurrency industry. But Kyle Davies, he got on a plane and left his troubles behind, flying to Bali, Indonesia. As his company was liquidated, and law enforcement authorities opened all kinds of investigations on two continents, Davies spent his days painting in cafes, and reading Ernest Hemingway on the beach. Wow, what a life. He also went sightseeing, traveling to Thailand, where the fried oysters cost only a few dollars. Life as a crypto industry pariah has turned out, you know, that wasn't so bad. A year ago, Three Arrows Capital, that's the hedge fund that was organized and founded by Davies, and Sue Zhu, both now 36 years old, that organization, by the way, Sue Zhu is spelled S-U, first name and last name, Z-H-U, Sue Zhu. I assume that's the correct pronunciation. But their Arrows Capital fund imploded almost overnight. They were worshipped by hundreds of thousands of Twitter followers. They have been really crypto superstars. They were known for their trading acumen and known for their bold predictions about the market. They were fixtures on the crypto podcast circuit. They had influence that allowed them to borrow hundreds of millions of dollars. When their hedge fund failed, a large swath of the industry was dragged down with it, and the ensuing crisis just drained the savings of millions of amateur investors and plunged other companies into bankruptcy. But by their own account, Davies and Zhu, Z-H-U, they've been thriving. They left Singapore, where Three Arrows was based, and traveled around Asia. Wow, it was convenient for them. their hedge fund located mainly in Singapore. After the crypto industry crashed last year, some of the business's leading figures were held to account, like Sam Bankman-Fried. He's the founder of FTX Exchange. He's under a house arrest at his childhood home in Palo Alto, California, and he's has been awaiting trial on fraud charges. I don't know what the result of those of the court activities or the court proceedings actually resulted in. Many other top executives who gain wealth and status by marketing crypto to the masses have avoided serious repercussions. Many had cashed out early, invested in real estate, or holed up in tax havens. So that's just a very, very small, tiny detail about some of those who were actively engaged in cryptocurrency. It still exists as a industry, but certainly is not as active and hopeful as it was several years ago. Speaking about active and hopeful, is your bank safe? I think it's certainly something to consider. Certainly banks are certainly undergoing major transformations in view of the upcoming possibility of the United States being involved in the and changing their currency to a digital currency. One thing you certainly should understand the relationship you have with your bank just in order to protect your assets. What is bail in and what is bail out? How does that affect your rights as a depositor? Well, you know, it's a legal fact that the money you have deposited in your bank, you really should just see it as it is. And it really is a loan you have made to your bank. And that loan earns interest, which you received. And of course, the the money, the bank takes your money and then loans it out to others. And then, of course, they make money on the difference in interest, difference in interest that you pay as a depositor, and and the interest that is paid by bank customers who have obtained loans from the bank. So that applies to interest rates as well as to fees. So now, if your bank is on shaky financial grounds, and your money is sitting in really bad loans, this ultimately becomes the problem of the creditor. That is you, the individual. Unfortunately, there's a huge percentage of our public that really does not see this as a legal reality. So, what is a bail-in? How does it affect your rights as a depositor? Well, a bail-in is another form where banks and financial institutions are rescued, where the responsibility is transferred from the taxpayer, in this case of a bailout, to depositors, which is you in this case. This was first introduced back in 2010 via an executive bill signed by President Obama. And that was a direct result of bailing out the 2008 too big to fail banks and financial institutions. You will recall that. The efforts that the government, including President Obama's direction, bailed out these banks. We're able to help them survive, getting money from the taxpayers. Well, bail-in will not add to the government's deficit, and however, it will allow banks and financial institutions at risk of failing to take some of your deposits to bail themselves out. So will a bail-in happen? Wow. Well, with the economy heading toward a possible recession, inflation right now at an all-time high, and the housing market really in a bubble, there's a lot of uncertainties that are looming over the heads of Americans. And it's possible, and not a definite prediction, but it's possible if the bank is on shaky financial grounds, you as the creditor, you as the depositor in your bank, the sum of the funds that you are currently feel safe with in a bank might be at jeopardy. Will the banks be able to unwillingly hold your money if we have another 2008 scenario crash? Well, in addition to what happened in recent years in Canada, Greece, Cyprus, and Venezuela, that is a likely possibility. And as I mentioned, Canada, Greece, Cyprus, and Venezuela. Currently, in Beirut, Lebanon, their banks have seized millions of accounts for the past 2 years, where depositors are on a financial lockdown. Wow. So that's a little scary prediction, and a very, very scary possibility for the American bank depositor. and who should really consider themselves just as a creditor, as I mentioned earlier. Okay, with that introduction to the central issue, which this reporter is following and will keep you updated on, CBDC, Central Bank Digital Currencies. And have been in the development by our federal government, the Federal Reserve. And this gets some questions that have been asked in the past. Just what is a central bank digital currency, CBDC? A CBDC is a digital form of a central bank money that's widely available to the general public. It refers to money that's actually the liability of a central bank, not local commercial banks that we're accustomed to dealing with. In the United States, there are currently two types of central bank money: physical currency issued by the Federal Reserve and digital balances held by commercial banks at the Federal Reserve. And we're accustomed to the dealing with the commercial banks at the Federal Reserve. Now, while Americans have long held money predominantly in a digital form, for example, in bank accounts, payment applications, or online transactions, a CBDC would differ from existing digital money available to the general public because a CBDC would be a liability of the Federal Reserve, not a commercial bank, a local commercial bank. Second question is, will the CBDC replace cash or paper currency? Well, the Federal Reserve is committed to ensuring the continued safety and availability of cash and is considering CBDC as a means to expand safe payment options, not to reduce or replace them. That's what they say at the current time, that the objective is not to replace or reduce cash, but it's just to supplement. Has a Federal Reserve decided to create a central bank digital currency? Well, they did publish a study, and it's called Money and Payments, the U.S. Dollar in the Age of Digital Transformation. And it was issued to the public to explain the CBDCs and the potential benefits and the risk of such a currency. The paper that was issued was not intended to supposedly advance any specific policy outcome. And supposedly no decisions have been made at this time. The Federal Reserve has claims to have made no decision on issuing such a currency. And they claim and they say that it would only proceed with the issuance, would only be authorized and implemented with a law from the Congress. The chairman of the Federal Reserve, last name is Powell, he said a central bank digital currency is something we would certainly need congressional approval for. Let's hope. So the Federal Reserve has been considering this type of currency for quite a while because it was explained in an executive order from President Biden on March 9th and has been in a study and pilot project ever since. They claim that it could provide households and businesses a convenient electronic form of central bank money with safety and liquidity that would give entrepreneurs a platform on which to present and create new financial products and services. It would certainly support faster and cheaper payments, including cross-border payments, and expand customer access to the financial system. They claim that it would protect our privacy. Any CBDC would need to strike an appropriate balance between safeguarding the privacy rights of consumers and affording the transparency necessary to deter criminal activity. So they would not want, and part of it is that this would pretty much prevent use of this currency for illegal purposes. The initiatives that the federal government has authorized, you may have heard about, and they have been involved in experiments for over a year, including the hypothetical CBDC being experimented with. There's three examples. One is called the Project Hamilton, and that's a multi-year exploratory research project that's conducted by the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston in collaboration with MIT's Digital Currency Initiative. And they're studying the technical feasibility of a general purpose CBDC that could be used by an economy the size of the United States. The second pilot is an innovation center at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York to facilitate collaboration with the bank for international settlements. And then the third one is a technology lab at the Board of Governors that has several CBDC experiments underway. So this been in it certainly is a system that is being studied, experimented with, and certainly a great deal of effort and money have gone into introducing this type of currency to the American public. By the way, the paper that was circulated supposedly had a public comment time frame. Unfortunately, the public comment time has expired. There are a number of states and political spokespeople who are saying no to crypto payment. The most notable one is Ron DeSantis from Florida. And 18 other states, in addition to Florida, are now saying, are now opposing the use of the CBDC, tools. France, decoded, Argentina's central bank, banned payment providers from offering crypto transactions. And it has said that it intends to reduce the country's payment system exposure to digital assets. In France, the Senate Committee on Economic Affairs approved an amendment allowing registered cryptocurrency to hire social media influencers for advertising and promotional purposes. In Nigeria, they're preparing new industry regulations for digital asset platforms. So in some situations, there's quite a bit of opposition to just the type of currency, to most types of cryptocurrency and digital currency, whereas other countries, they're actually studying it and doing pilots such as they are here in the United States. Here in the United States, North Carolina, legislative house passed a bill banning CBDC payments to the state. They passed that legislation unanimously, prohibiting payments to the state using a central bank digital currency. The latest version of the legislation aims to prohibit individuals from using the CBDCs for any payments to the state. It also bars the Federal Reserve from using North Carolina as a potential testing ground for its own CBDC pilot. So the question is, what would happen if paper money became obsolete? Well, what would happen if every transaction was required to be digital? Well, is it really absolutely necessary to keep paper money in circulation or somehow? Well, let's face it, more Americans are going cashless. Back in 2015, the polls showed that around 24% of people didn't make purchases in cash in a typical week. They didn't make any other purchases in cash. That was 24% in 2015. Back in 2015, 24% of the population used digital currency, electronic currency to be exact, for their purposes. Whereas just now, here in 2023, that percentage has jumped up to 41%. You say they don't make any of their purchases in cash, they make all of their purchases digital form. That's quite an increase. Digital applications like Venmo and Apple Pay, along with digital assets like cryptocurrency, has really gained a lot of steam over the past decade. Although, cryptocurrency had that highly publicized implosion last year. So there's issues surrounding accessibility to a CBDC, security and privacy. About 4.5% of our households, or 5.9 million, were unbanked in 2021, meaning they didn't have a checking or savings account with a bank or credit union. Those, do not have a bank, of course, are shut out of the digital or mobile economy. This was addressed during the pandemic when they sent out relief money. And they sent out a number of them to folks, and they sent debit cards or paper checks, which cost money if you use the check cashing service. So the paper money paper money tends not to be subject to cryptocurrency, crypto security risk, or privacy violations. When I hand you a $20 bill, there's no data captured by anybody from that transaction. It's relatively anonymous, whereas all digital forms of payment, of course, generate data trails. In the worst case scenario, governments could use the digital paper trails to surveil the population and prevent them from using mobile, or digital services if they disapprove of their financial activity. Or the platform could target people with financial products that they don't really need. Charles Skinner, a professor of legal studies at Wharton School, said that moving towards CBDCs would shift the monetary power from the private sector to the government. However, there are flaws in each one of, you know, all the arguments. For example, to reduce your anxiety, you know, much of the money we use today is already electronic, and it's electronic through demand deposits. And the big reason people don't really use banks a lot of times because they just don't trust them. If you're already skeptical of the financial system and potentially the government, a digital currency might not change those views. That it's also been said that the U.S. dollar is the reserve currency of the world, and that's because people really trust the United States for a whole bunch of reasons. We have a stable economy. We have a robust rule of law. We respect property rights. We enforce contracts. We have an independent judiciary, or at least of those things. We've had a history of those things. I might add that we're going through a period of time in our history where there's major violations of the rule of law, respect property rights, enforcing contracts, and certainly violations of conduct with the independent judiciary. So this is a project and a very strong possibility that has pros and cons from both sides of the aisle. The current proposals really aren't aimed at completely replacing cash, but it still remains to be seen whether the government will end up creating that digital currency. You know, that the political appetite, as they say, around the CBDC ebbs and flows. Do we need to have paper money to keep the economy humming? Well, many people say cash needs to be kept in circulation because so many people still use it despite the move toward cashless payments. The Pew Research Center pointed out that cashlessness is on the rise, and it's also been noted that nearly 60% of Americans say they pay cash for at least some of their purchases in a typical week. Despite all this excitement surrounding the new forms of digital currency, physical cash is also innovative, adapts to people's needs, and it certainly is something that is very anonymous, and the general objective of currency changes has been to maintain people's privacy and has been to having a financial transaction that is largely anonymous. So just keep in mind that, boy, back in 1950, Americans could pay for dinner at a restaurant even if they left their money at home for the first time in history. And that was the year that the Diners Club introduced their credit card. More than 70 years later, the cashless society that's been promised, still hasn't yet materialized. And that's despite direct deposit, BNPL, Apple Pay, Venmo, cryptocurrency, and yet the green paper rectangular pieces of paper with pictures of dead presidents still have a home in our wallets. According to the New York Times, central banks across the world are experimenting with digital versions of the money, things like Bitcoin and others. That are controlled by the state. Sweden, China, and Japan have introduced digital currencies alongside old-fashioned cash. The plan in large would be to phase out money, paper money gradually over time. So, according to the authors, America's CBDC is only for wholesale transactions and is not yet a consumer currency. Yet, that's the key word. Based on that yet, this is the ongoing reason for this reporter, who is not an employee of IRS or any other entity, but this is the reason for this reporter's existence, and we will definitely keep you up to date on the progress of the central bank digital currency innovation in this country. And with that, we'll turn it back over to your host and owner, William Brown. And we'll turn it back over to William Brown to continue with the business segment of this programming.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Outstanding. So we're looking forward to hearing more information as the year goes on. But ladies and gentlemen, if you like the world on finance with yours truly and Mr. Edward James, you are to make sure to tune in each and every Wednesday, 10 a.m. on the West Coast, 1 p.m. on the East, 12 Central, 11 Mountain Time. So anyway, a great show. Keep it locked right here on The Buzz, Studio W Buzz, your global radio network with the finest in broadcasting, music, sports, talk, comedy, entertainment, and a whole lot more. Enjoy your Wednesday.
Everybody's having a good time, and you know what's going through my mind. Do you mind if I